Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Superhuman Semper Fi by Evan Curry, narrated by Kevin T. Collins. Prologue. Harun Khabib rose tiredly from where he had woken, a chill soaking into his bones that both confused and honestly terrified him a little. He looked around, trying to remember what he could from before he had blacked out, or after. The last thing the ISIS fighter remembered was being in the Iraqi desert, but his memory was assaulted by flashes of terror and scenes unlike anything he'd ever experienced, and he had seen some of the worst of war in his days. Men, women, and children dying of trauma, or worse, of starvation as they wasted away, those were old nightmares for Harun, almost old friends in a dark and twisted way. He knew that he was doomed to hell for the things he had done, no matter what the mullahs of the Islamic State said. No god would condone the things he had seen, let alone had done, but he hoped that his sacrifice would one day mean something better for those who came after. Now, however, he had fresh, new nightmares living in his skull, mere flashes of tortures that could only have been cut from the very cloth of hell itself, and he did not understand. Around him, the hustle and bustle of the city finally caught his focus, and Harun looked around intently to try and determine where he was. He had been near Qaim, the last he remembered, but there was no city this size anywhere in that region, and certainly not one as chilly as he currently felt. He stumbled out of the alley, leaning on the side of the building as he clutched at his head and looked around at the mass of people, nearly stumbling into the path of several.
"Hey, buddy, watch it, will you? I'm walking here."
Harun leaned back out of the way of the man who'd addressed him, confused beyond belief. He didn't know much English, but he was aware of enough to make out the intent of the words, though the man didn't seem particularly irritated as he continued on past, just more reflexive speaking as he moved around Harun and continued on his way. Groaning from behind him caused Harun to half turn and realize that he wasn't alone.
"Where are we?" Yosef Burun grumbled as he too stumbled out of the shade of the building, shivering slightly before he stepped into the sun.
"I am not certain," Harun said slowly, eyes sweeping up the street and then down, and finally looking up to the skyline. "By Allah the Merciful, it is not possible."
"What is it, Harun?" Yosef asked, eyes following his comrade's gaze as he stared up at one of the most recognizable buildings in the world. A symbol of the great Satan itself, the Empire State Building stood there not more than a kilometer from their position, mocking them in its utter impossibility.
The call that came in via dispatch hadn't raised much of a flag for Sergeant Ahmed Karush. He got half a dozen calls a day just like it, directed to him because of his heritage. Two men shouting in a foreign-sounding language described as Islamic, despite there not being any such language, generally meant someone misunderstood what they were hearing and could mean anything from Arabic to Hebrew and damn near anything in between. He hit the squawk on his patrol car's siren as he approached the reported area and spotted the men in question.
"Well, at least they're not Sikhs this time," he thought dryly as he pulled the car over to the side and examined the pair carefully as they started from the sound and appearance of the police car. The sheer number of people who mistook Sikhs for Arabs was disheartening, both for himself and for the Sikhs he inevitably had to deal with. On the plus side, Ahmed had learned quite a bit of Indian languages, from Punjabi to Urdu and a number in between.
The pair was certainly from the Middle East, however, he could tell that at a glance. The odd part, though, was how they were dressed, in tattered clothing that was a mix of practically rags and military tactical gear that looked like surplus from the former Soviet armories, if not the modern-day Russian army. He clenched the steering wheel slightly tighter, knuckles whitening as he realized that they looked a lot like the sort of men he'd fought against on his last tour with the U.S. Army. Ahmed slipped the car into park and reached for his radio.
"Dispatch, car 409 are arriving on scene," he said. "Two suspects, Middle Eastern descent, both agitated, not happy to see me. I'm going to talk to them."
"Roger, 409er," dispatch responded. "Do you need backup?" Ahmed almost said no without thinking about it, but a chill down his spine made him reconsider.
"Yeah," he said, as he popped the door of the car. "Roll back up to my location."
He figured he was probably overreacting, but the terror alert had been upped to red in their morning brief, and he knew from a few friends who were still in that the military was similarly on a heightened response.
"Roger, car 409er, back up rolling to your location. Be careful."
Ahmed squawked back confirmation, but didn't say anything as he slammed the car door shut and walked around the front of the cruiser and put a smile on his face.
"Can I help you?" he asked, opening with English automatically.
His ears pricked up when the pair shot rapid-fire Arabic back and forth, almost too fast for him to follow. He was fluent, but they were using a Syrian dialect he wasn't as comfortable with. The pair were scared, though. He picked that up and didn't seem to know where they were. Bizarre. Must have been some night out. Ahmed switched to Arabic, holding a hand out. "Are you okay? Do you need help?" The pair shut up like he'd slapped them, staring at him with unadulterated fear, unfortunately not something he was entirely unused to. Many immigrants from the region, and others with similar political issues, held no love or trust for uniforms. Police weren't friends to the average person in many areas of the world, and some people saw every uniform as a military one. Ahmed sighed, using his de-escalation voice, ironically close to his "scared children are listening" voice. "Could I see your ID, please? And do you have anyone I can call to come help you?" The pair exchanged glances, and something didn't sit well with the police officer. He'd seen every look under the sky, but what he saw in the eyes of the pair in front of him wasn't coming from a couple scared immigrants or refugees. It wasn't even the look he saw on petty criminals when they were cornered. It was something harder, something he'd last seen in Iraq. Ahmed turned slightly side on to the pair, shifting his holster out of their line of sight, and slowly dropped his right hand to his belt, his palm settling onto the grip of his 9mm. "I'm going to need to see some ID," he said again in Arabic. The two men remained silent, their eyes skirting around as they shifted postures, and he knew they were looking to run. Ahmed flipped the snap off his holster with one finger, the others curling around the grip automatically. "There's no reason to be afraid," he said, still keeping his tone calm as he tried to defuse the situation before it could turn into something ugly. As best he could tell, neither of the men was armed, so as long as they were talking and not trying anything funny, he'd be willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. "I just need to see some ID, and then I can let you call someone to come get you, all right?" The two didn't calm down as he'd hoped, but rather continued to get more and more agitated as they began whispering back and forth in that rapid-fire Arabic dialect, low enough and fast enough that Ahmed was having no luck following the discussion. The chirp of another squad car hitting its siren momentarily as it slowed to a stop behind him came as a relief. He didn't turn away from the two men, however, even as a pair of doors slammed behind him.
"Hey, Sarge, what's going on?"
"I'm not sure," Ahmed said without looking behind him. "Pair of subjects, highly agitated, look like they slept in the alley, not interested in listening or calming down."
"I can see that," Lieutenant Griffin said as he stepped up beside Ahmed, frowning slightly. "Jackie, check down the alley, would you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Can you understand them?" Griffin asked under his breath as the younger cop edged around and headed down to check the alley they were all in front of.
"Barely, if at all," Ahmed said with a shake of his head. "It's a Syrian dialect, and they have pretty bad accents. Think backwoods Cajun, word choice and all."
"Ouch, just what we need. Syrian rednecks."
Ahmed winced slightly at that, not that it was inaccurate, but more in worry that the pair they were trying to talk down might overhear it and get pissy about the comparison. Of course, it was unlikely they knew exactly what a redneck was, given their apparently limited language skills. He and the lieutenant continued to try and establish some communication with the pair, slowly edging closer to the agitated duo until a shout caught their attention.
"Lieutenant, you'd better come see this!"
Ahmed and Griffin half turned, looking toward the alley briefly before returning their focus to the pair, who were also looking over at the young patrol woman who was stumbling out of the alley, pale as death.
"What is it?" Griffin demanded,
eyes now locked on the pair while he walked over to the alley. The only answer he got right away from the young officer was the sound of her retching and spattering the concrete with her breakfast. Ahmed didn't know what she'd seen, but he tightened his hand fully around the grip of his pistol and pulled just enough to break the friction fit while he tried to split his attention between the alley and the pair of now suspects. Griffin's voice, swearing vehemently a moment later, was enough for Ahmed to pull his service weapon entirely into his hand, keeping it aimed down as he gave up any attempt at a low profile.
"Do not move. Stay right where you are," he ordered in Arabic, one hand held out to the pair as he shifted sideways enough to look down the alley and catch a glimpse of the lieutenant, switching to English for his next words.
"Griffin, what is it?"
"There are body parts back here, Sarge," Griffin spat. "I see a couple arms, a foot, some poor fuck's head. He looks Middle Eastern, too. Jesus! Find out what they know. I'm calling this in."
"Right." Ahmed glared at the pair, again switching languages. "No more of this. I need your names and identification and whatever you know about the body parts in the alley." The two looked at each other, clearly alarmed as their eyes focused on the gun in his hand.
"Body parts?" one asked, confused.
"I don't understand."
"Don't play games with me," Ahmed snapped. "You two, neither of you, belong here. I can see that 1,000 miles away. There is no coincidence that there are body parts, including someone's head, in the alley you are arguing in front of. It will go easier on you if you tell me what you know."
"We know nothing about body parts," one of them objected strenuously. "We woke up here. We don't even know how." "Be silent, Yosef," the other snapped.
Ahmed frowned. "You woke up here? Where were you the last you remember?"
The two exchanged glances, but neither was willing to speak. Ahmed sighed, irritated.
"Fine. I'm taking you into custody until we figure this out. Back up. Back up. Sit down against the wall. Spread your legs out. Keep your hands in sight."
Behind him, he could hear Griffin calling for more backup, as well as giving the details of what they'd found over the radio. Ahmed had something of a bad feeling that this was going to be the start of a truly long day. The only thing that was keeping his pistol in its holster was the fact that the two were clearly unarmed. Hell, they were barely dressed, and they seemed as confused as anyone about how they got where they were. The pair were still arguing with each other as they followed his orders, and Ahmed listened to every word, his only confusion with the situation continuing to grow. As he listened more, he became increasingly lost. What are they talking about? If the duo were to be believed, they'd have to have been kidnapped from Iraq, of all places, then smuggled unknowingly into the U.S. That should be impossible, but the fact that they were whispering it in his hearing was enough for him to have them held while their ID was tracked down, if nothing else. More cars were arriving. After all, dismembered corpses tended to attract a great deal of attention. Sirens, lights, along with all the accompanying tagalongs, were rapidly turning the street into a circus, but Ahmed just sidled a little closer to the pair so he could hear what they were saying as they slumped against the side of the building. "They're talking about the Islamic State. Haven't heard as much about them lately, but weren't they in the news over the last couple days?" Ahmed had a vested interest in keeping an eye on what extremists who pretended to be Islamic were up to. The Islamic State had been quieter over the last few years, though still quite active in Syria due to the civil war that continued to rage, as well as making headway into Africa, where the news didn't care as much when people died. Still, the group had lost a lot of the bravado of its heyday. In fact, as he thought about it, the latest news was about Islamic State members going missing from various areas across the Middle East. It had been a footnote in the news. No one really cared about missing terrorists, but now he had two guys speaking Arabic and talking about not knowing how they got into the country. Ahmed shifted away from them and waved over the lieutenant. "What is it, Sarge?" Griffin asked, rubbing the bridge of his nose as he walked over. "I think these two might be ISIS, Lieutenant," Ahmed whispered. "In New York?" Griffin asked, skepticism dripping from his tone. "You mean sympathizers?" "No, I think they're from Syria." "No way they got into the country. Not legally. Hell, not through most of the illegal methods, for that matter." Griffin shook his head. "Didn't say they did. They don't seem to know how they got in," Ahmed replied, "which is confusing as hell, I'll admit, but they're talking about the Islamic State like their members." Griffin nodded slowly. "Okay, we've got body parts from at least three people back there, and you say they're talking about a terrorist group like that. We'll hold them until we ID them at least. I don't know what's going on here, but it's nothing good." Ahmed snorted. "Not many good things start with dismembered body parts, Lieutenant." Griffin snorted. "That's an understatement, Sarge." While the two were talking, more officers showed up with cars arriving from all directions. A coroner's van was pulling in as the pair of unknowns began arguing more heatedly with every new arrival. Ahmed let them fight as he was more interested in hearing what they had to say, and also recording every word than he was in keeping them from making a scene. "They're probably just loonies," Ahmed thought grimly, but he couldn't quite shake the thought of, what if they weren't? So focused was he on listening that he failed to notice one of the black, unmarked cars that pulled up, driver and passenger climbing out as a coroner walked past them with baggies full of body parts.
"What the ever-loving F?"
The fat man in the cheap suit cringed back from the coroner as the smell of copper-tainted air hit his nostrils, a faint hint of rot already starting to make itself known.
"Jesus, Captain, this place is a shit show," he growled, brushing his hands on his jacket as though he'd actually touched something that might have clung to his flesh.
"Shut it, Blakely," the other man said as he rounded the front of the car and looked over the scene. He pointed at one of the officers, getting their attention.
"Cero!"
"Yes, sir?"
the young man asked, rushing over.
"What's the situation?"
Captain Mackland demanded.
"Well, Cap, you'd have to ask the Sarge or Lieutenant for all the details," Saro answered. "Sarge got the call because of who was reported, and the Lieutenant arrived right after, backing him up." Blakely snorted, rolling his eyes.
"I'm asking you, son."
"Right. Well," Saro nodded down the alley. "A couple guys were reported as looking pretty freaked out and yelling in a Middle Eastern-sounding language, which was why the Sarge got the call. He arrived on scene. They were pretty agitated, he said, but he got them calmed down of sorts. The Lieutenant went down the alley, and that's kind of when the crap hit the fan, sir."
"I can see that," Macklin said dryly, as another coroner's assistant walked by with more body parts for the meat wagon. "What about the perps?"
"Sarge is staying close to him. He's just letting them talk, I think. Keeps whispering back and forth with the LT, Saro said. "Don't know what they're talking about, except I'm pretty sure they and the Sarge repeated the word ISIS a few times."
"Fucking terrorist bastards," Blakely snarled, eyes sweeping the pair sitting against the wall. "What, ain't they cuffed?"
"Don't know," Saro shrugged. "Following the Lieutenant and Sarge's lead on that one."
"Fuck those two."
Blakely pulled a couple pairs of cuffs from the car, quickly turning and stalking across the sidewalk to where the pair were standing. He grabbed one by the shoulder before anyone even noticed him approach.
"On the ground! Hands behind your back!"
The fast burst of violence took everyone by surprise, but what came next made it look like a friendly exchange of words. Texas. The phone rang as Alexander Hale leaned back against the couch, the pressure of his wife's weight pushing comfortably against him while they watched a movie on the flat screen.
"Don't answer it," Deborah groaned. Alex winced.
"Sorry, hon. Have to. I recognize the ringtone."
He groaned himself, reaching across the edge of the couch with as little movement as possible, and flicked the phone on with his thumb.
"Hale," he grunted into the device.
"Turn on the news."
Alex felt a chill at those words, because he knew they boded nothing good. Wordlessly, he reached for the remote and hit pause on the movie before switching over to the news network. The devastation on the screen caused him to shift upright, pushing Deborah off him. She didn't notice, however, because her jaw had dropped and her eyes were just as pinned to the screen as his.
"God," he croaked out. "Is that New York?"
"Got it in one," Colonel Emily Pierce confirmed. "We don't know the story yet, but just before it happened, we had a hit on a database search for ISIS members out of that precinct."
"What? That's nowhere near where any of them went missing."
"We know. And it's not the first incident, either. We've had two other hits, both outside the country, in places with spotty intel, so we weren't sure. Looks like whoever is doing this dropped off Tibetan separatists in Beijing, and we think some missing militia types that vanished from Oklahoma wound up in Tehran."
Alex swore under his breath.
"They're trying to kick off World War III.
"Or worse," Emily agreed. "That's pretty much what the brass is thinking. We need you in New York."
"I'm on my way," Alex said. "I'll call you when I'm en route."
He disconnected and hugged Deborah, kissing her deeply.
"I have to go," he said.
"I know," she smiled wanly, eyes still flicking to the screen. "Be careful."
"Hey, it's me."
She glared at him for the bad joke, and Alex held up his hands.
"Sorry, I'll be careful,"
he promised, giving her another quick kiss before he got off the couch and crossed out of the living room, heading for the kitchen and the door to the garage where his gear was located. Desert camis were his preferred combat dress, along with a bucket and ruby lens shooter's glasses. He wore civilian boots, though, as they were just as tough and a hell of a lot more comfortable than anything he'd ever been issued on active duty. After suiting up, Alex belted on his 5.7 Magnum and a few extra magazines.
He didn't know if it would be of much value. Experience told him that most of the changed were less than likely to be overly vulnerable to even much higher calibers than what his pistol packed. If it came to that, though, the former Marine would do what he'd always done best. Improvise, adapt, and overcome. He stepped out into the fenced-off backyard, looking up at the clear blue sky as he clipped the satellite phone to his belt and made sure it was connected to the induction transceiver in his helmet. Then he just looked up into the sky and, in a flash of motion, vanished from the suburban backyard and into the sky faster than the eye could hope to track. Time to get to work. Chapter 1. New York, New York. Ahmed groaned as he twitched, then shifted, and fell to the sidewalk. He rolled over, barely able to move, and looked at the glass he'd been practically embedded in. Probably lucky it wasn't plate, he thought, as he slowly tested all his limbs, pleased and surprised to find that everything seemed intact and operational. The street they had been on was a war zone. There was just no other way to describe it. He could see the smoking wrecks of police and city vehicles, some overturned and some just splayed across the street like children's toys amid the rubble. Rubble, he blinked, clearing dust from his eyes. Where'd that come from? Oh. His eyes were drawn to the building he'd had the two suspects sitting against, or what was left of it. Ahmed's brain was still reeling, unable to quite put together what had happened, as he couldn't see to work any of it out. What the hell happened? He thought in confusion. I know they weren't wearing suicide vests. I looked. Was there a bomb in the building? As the ringing in his ears began to fade, Ahmed stumbled through the debris, catching himself on a car. He could feel more than hear the beat of chopper blades overhead and turned to look up at the news chopper that was orbiting overhead. How is it, Ahmed wondered, that the reporters always beat emergency responders to the scene anyway? It seemed like an unwritten rule of the universe, somehow, that the people he least wanted to deal with were always the first people on scene. He would honestly rather deal with the criminals than reporters most of the time. Even the ones who were friendly to the police were more trouble than they were worth, in his opinion. I must have a concussion, Ahmed thought in a moment of realization as his mind snapped back from where it had wandered off to. Need to focus. Ahmed cast about, wondering where his gun was, but as it wasn't in his hand or his holster. He expected it was under some of the debris in the area, and in that case, he wasn't finding it any time soon anyway. He mentally cursed that loss, the thought of the reams of paperwork he'd be filling out, causing his brain to wander again before he pulled it back to the present with a determined force of will. Where are the others? He asked himself, trying to keep his focus in place as he picked his way between wrecked cars and chunks of cement as he crossed the street and began to look for survivors. An unearthly howl sent shivers down his spine and rose a bead of cold sweat across Ahmed's skin as he twisted around to seek the source, now wishing more than ever that he had his gun, and not just because of the paperwork. The sound echoed down the concrete canyons of the city streets, making it impossible to determine where it had come from, but every instinct in Ahmed's soul told him that he needed either a weapon, a place to hide, or to run for his life. It might have been the concussion speaking, but he'd never been one for running or hiding anyway, so he scrambled across the debris field toward the closest police vehicle. His hearing was coming back, and now he could hear screaming over the howl and the sound of the chopper blades. Every muscle in his body screamed at him as Ahmed wrenched open the door of an upside-down cruiser, crawling into where the shotgun was still braced between the front seats. He pulled it free and hit the trunk release with his other hand before crawling back out.
The chunk sound of the pump action working soothed his nerves like few things ever had. Ahmed tilted the weapon so he could watch the first of the 12-gauge cartridges sliding into the breech as he pushed the pump forward again.
"Who's out there?"
he called, now feeling a lot better, as he backed his way around the car to where the trunk had fallen open, scattering material around the ground under it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?